This is the beginning of class 9.
Sashi Bhagi Jashime Tasham Rira Vinshi Nyende Yampati Sange Shindu Mithe Uwagi Dogo Sangye Chodan Sangye Chodanma Chanchu Badu Dagni Kyasu Chi Dagi Chunyen Dibhe Sunangki Drola Penche Sangye Chupasho Sangye Chodan Sangye Chodanma Chanchu Badu Dami Kasushi Dagi Chunyen Dibhe Sunangi Drola Penche Sangye Jupasho Sangye Chodan Sangye Chodanma Chanchu Badu Dami Suchi Dahi Chunyen Kibbe Sunamki Yola Penche Sange Juhasho.
Stay there all night if you want, so, so I just about did.
Is that Chang Yen?
So he said he was the key, you know, he could, I don't care if he could stay all night. And I had to use it while I could use it. So now I was a wreck today. I couldn't. He let me stay today also. So I found out a lot of neat stuff. We're doing the prayer book for Sejong. And inside there's a commentary to the source of all my prayers. And it's an unknown commentary, it's by Pamukkale, it was lost, and we found it, and translated it. And then, so I was looking up all this stuff. Also, Tsongkhapa's, the book itself, that prayer, which is always done in Sechu, isn't in its collected works. I mean, it's very, the whole thing is very exciting, but if you're into that kind of stuff.
Who is that book? Is it older than the text you've
been working on? Well, since you ask. No, there's no such work in his collected works, but it's buried in the middle of a bigger work. And no, I don't think people know that. And then it looks like around the time of the fifth Dalai Lama, people started to attach it to the sixth, the Jorchu, the preliminary practices, the Wundo. You know, and I don't know why it was such a thing, but for some reason they started to take it out and use it at the end of the Wundo, which is why we do it. But I haven't figured out why yet. I haven't figured out who's the first person who did it. It's very interesting. He wrote that in praise of, at the end of the Wundo, which is why we do it. I haven't figured out why yet. I haven't figured out who's the first person who did it. It's very interesting. He wrote that in praise of Maitreya, something like that. This one? That's a lazy cow. How's that?
Can we run that line,
Brian? Anyway, this is proof number 7, all right? This is 7th proof. We had the first 6, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just to make sure I'm in the right place. I like this one. Jumbo Wangdin Churchen. That means let's take the four elements which have Wangbo. What's Wangbo?
Sense powers.
Sense powers, okay? The sense powers. You know, I'm trying to think if living tissue is a good translation for that. I have a feeling it might be. I can't think of any living tissue which is not the four elements which have the sense powers. You know what I mean? I can't think of any four elements included in your body which have sense powers which are not living tissue. I think it's this, I think it's they're trying to say the same thing. Okay. Consider that the living tissue in your body, basically. It's not the main cause for your mind. It's not that material cause for your mind. It's not what turns into your mind. Because de la nena lola nevi makere echa, which means you can damage the sense powers and you don't damage the mind, necessarily.
You mean you can damage the living tissue?
Yeah, this is a big argument of Dharmakirti's, and you have to listen to it in plain English, okay? The Chavakas say what? They say what about the body and the mind?
Inseparable.
Yeah, that the body provides a unique basis for the mind to stay, to be there and to stay. That's their belief. And that happens to be the belief of Western countries too. You know, that the physical body, and maybe the brain mainly, provides this unique basis for the mind. And unique is a word that Dharmakirti uses also. He agrees that in general the sense powers have some kind of supporting function for the mind. But he doesn't agree that they are the unique basis for the mind. He doesn't agree that they are the one main source for mind to come from. He doesn't agree with that. He agrees that they play a role, but he doesn't agree that they are the one main source.
So without them, I mean, if you had no sense powers,
Sumeka, formless realm, you can. According to Buddhism, you wouldn't have any sense perceptions, but you would have mental thoughts. You'd have mental perceptions. So he says something interesting. You know, if what is it for the mind to be healthy? Or what is it for the mind to be... There's a word in Tibetan called gyepa, which means... I don't know what it means. It means like when your body is fat and happy. You know? It means like healthy and happy, you know? Prosperous in a way. There's a word like that. I don't know how to say it. Gyepa means wide. It's like sangye. It means prosper or something like that. Just be chubby and healthy and, you know, shining with health and stuff like that. That word is used for the mind when the mind is in a healthy, happy state. And like if the mind were well fed, like if the mind is in general being sustained nicely, then it's clear and it's happy and it's joyful in a way. That's the Buddhist definition of a nice, healthy, well-fed mind. Okay? And what he's trying to say is, if you damage one of the sense powers, then if there were this unique relationship that the Chavakas say there is, then somehow the mind should become less contented. The mind should be somehow distressed if you poked your eye out or if you cut your finger. Then the mind should always be distressed. Okay, there should never be a case when the mind wasn't distressed. Or you could say it this way: if you removed one of the five sense powers, if you removed 20% of your sense powers, then the mind should get 20% less gyepa. Should somehow get distressed by 20%. It should lose its health by a similar ratio if the body were the unique and ultimate basis for the mind. In the way that if you like took a certain amount of material from the acorn, then the oak tree is somehow stunted or deficient. Like that. I mean, it sounds like a silly argument. So, you know, who would believe that if you poked your eye out, your mind would get distressed necessarily, okay? Or 20% smaller, or something like that. But that would be the necessary consequence if the mind had this unique relationship with the body, with the sense powers. And then he gives the example of bodhisattvas. And there was a famous bodhisattva, I forgot his name. Anyway, he met a demon on the road in India. He was in Nalanda, one of the main monasteries. And he was on his way there. And the demon said, he disguised himself as a normal person, and he said, if you're a big bodhisattva, then let me have your eyeball. So the bodhisattva, he pushed his fingers into the eye socket and pulled out his own eye. And he gave it to this being to make him happy. I mean, the story of Nagarjuna is the same. The way that Nagarjuna died is that someone asked him for his head, and he gave it. Something like that. So then the demon threw the eyeball on the ground and smashed it. And the guy almost lost his bodhicitta. It's a famous example, you know, can you lose your bodhicitta after you have it? And then he went to the monastery finally, and people used to make fun of him because he had a disfigured eye. And he used to say, well, I've seen more of the scriptures with one eye than you see with two, or something like that. Anyway, you're not allowed to do that until you're ready. Okay, they say start with vegetables. Shantideva says start with vegetables. You break your bodhisattva vow if you do it too early. I mean, you shouldn't try
to give your eye away too early.
Do things like chopping your arm off or giving someone your kidney. If you're not ready, you're not supposed to do it. Because then you'll regret it later and it'll be a bad deed. So if you regret a good deed, that's a very bad deed. So they say don't do a good deed. Don't like give away all your money because you'll regret it 3 days later, and then all that good power will become a bad negative power. So, yeah.
What about the myriad exceptions to this particular rule? The fact that most ordinary human beings are distressed.
He says Machiavelli. Now they say there's an explanation in the reading of why people get distressed, but it's not. If it were a unique basis, an ultimate basis for the mind, then the mind should become always distressed, regardless of who you are. So it seems to be a matter of training and not of an innate relationship. There's no inherent relationship between your body and mind of that type. There just is not. The bodhisattva feels something. He senses the feeling of the eye coming out, but he just feels happy, feels joy. That someone has asked him for something. I think when you get to that level and someone asks you for something, you just feel very happy to give it to them. And you don't really think about that you're not going to have it anymore.
But if he's addressing it to Charvaka, I would assume that they don't really believe in bodhisattvas, and they wouldn't believe that you could poke your eye out, pull out, and be content. So it's sort of a moot point.
It must have been a good argument for them, or Dharmakirti wouldn't have given it. You're not allowed to give an argument in two cases. You're not allowed to argue to somebody an argument if they already believe it. That's bad logic. Illogic. It's one of the faults of logic. You're not allowed to argue to Dharmakirti that things are impermanent because he already saw it. You don't have to argue. If it's unnecessary, it's a bad argument. Also, if your opponent hasn't seen the truth of your reason, you're not allowed to give it to them. Dharmakirti wrote down those rules. So, apparently, there were some Chavakas maybe who had seen a Buddhist do something like that. You know, I don't know. Would have to be.
I mean, your average Westerner would say that that's preposterous.
Well, no, I think it's very common that, I think the best one in the West is when a woman has a baby and she goes through that suffering. I've been at the bedside of a woman who was just gave birth maybe an hour before or something. And they're like beaming and they're like happy and thrilled. And the sense powers have undergone a very bad damage, you know. If the sense powers were the cause that turned into the mind, then the mind of a woman who had just given birth should be quite distressed and damaged. And it's not. You know, it's actually quite beaming and happy and Gepa.
Yeah, but they don't have the pain at the time. An hour later, they don't have the pain. If they had the pain, they would.
And they must feel some discomfort, I would imagine. Not having been through it in this life.
Really?
There must be extreme discomfort, I should say. Especially like a cesarean or something. But they're smiling, holding the kid up, and, you know. What I'm saying is, it's hard for you to imagine what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is that he's saying that if it's so silly that you can't accept it. If the sense powers were the unique cause that turned into the mind, or the unique basis for the mind, then a woman who just gave birth should suddenly be very depressed, or very upset, or very sad, or some are, but not all. Okay, I mean, when you talk cause and effect, when you take away the acorn, all oak trees don't grow. That's a nirlingigya. That's a material cause. So there, obviously, the pain has some kind of effect on a normal mind, but it's not necessary. So it's not the nirlingigya. It's not that necessary relationship which a direct cause must have with its direct result. It's just, it doesn't. And you know, I've been teaching this. This is the third time I taught it, right? In this last week or so. You can't go home and say, oh yeah, now I believe in future lives, you know. But given all these 10 arguments together, you know, if you can get some kind of a sense, if you put them all together as a sum, I think they can affect your thinking about future lives. I don't expect you to accept it right away. But think about the relationship between your sense powers and your mind. The living tissue and your mind are just not like that. You know?
Well, what about all these chemicals that make people taking, you know, the fentanyl drug that everybody's...
No, they talk about it. They talk about it.
Or acid. I mean, obviously there is a great connection between these things. And
the Charvakas say that. They say, well, what happens when a person gets drunk? You know, the alcohol affects the sense powers. And then the person's mind becomes crazy. And they asked that question too. I don't remember the answer. Obviously it affects, but it's not the main cause. Obviously there is a connection, but it's not the acorn to the oak tree.
So in meditation, supposedly, whatever happens to the mind, is there not something happened to the senses? Is there not energy flowing through you?
On a higher level, and on the Tummo Mayim Bilam, right? What's that? Tummo Mayim Bilam. In the teachings that I can't mention in the sutra class, there's obviously a relationship, but not to the gross physical body. And not to the physical body that you thinking of now. That's a different subject. Okay. But that is a very important for Dzogchen, for the second stage of tantric practice. That's a great relationship, but different powers and everything.
I'm just having a lot of difficulty with the first six and this one, just trying to get the logical principle. So would you say that the logic behind this one, and probably some of the others, is that if there, because of the word always, if there's an exception, or if there is a higher case or some, then it disproves the...
If there's an exception, it shows that it's not the nirlingigya. Okay. It's not the main material cause. If it were a contributing factor, there could be exceptions. That would prove that the sense powers are a contributing factor to mind, but they are not the stuff which turns into mind. You did not come from sense powers. Your mind did not come from sense powers. Which means you didn't come from sense powers. Where did you come from? I mean, you don't think of it. You just assume it was your mother's and father's stuff. It's not. And there's so many evidences that it's not. And finally, when you get to the evidence that it's the mind, it's quite comfortable. It's, you know, you're almost relieved by then to hear it. Oh, yeah, it was just your mind. Oh, well, that makes sense. Same stuff, you know. Came the moment before, turned into my mind now. That's why all these things went on. It makes sense. Okay.
Michael, I'm sorry. Can you just retranslate that? All these
things. Consider the elements in the form of sense powers. You see, some people on that elimination chart got a little confused because the sense powers are made of atoms. They are made of the four elements also. There are inner four elements and there are outer four elements. Consider the inner four elements. They are not the unique... Let me see what word to use. I know you. You're not the unique cause of mind. Because when they are damaged, the mind is not always damaged. What's that?
Are we going to read it?
I don't think so. If you want it, you have to come with the other class. It's in your... the Tibetan is in your handout.
Day.
Penje.
Penje.
Okay. Argument number A. Lo Chö Chen means let's consider mind, main mind. Now Dharma Kirti is gonna. Let's take mind. Consider mind. Lo Chö Chen means consider mind. Now Dharmakirti is going to turn the tables. What do you think he's going to say? Turn the tables from number 7.
That's the cause of sense powers.
Yeah. Alright. He says, not only do the sense powers not provide the basis for mind, mind provides the cause for the sense powers.
Mind does.
Yeah. But if he says cause, isn't he going to get in trouble?
Does it disappear?
Yeah, and turn into the sense powers, right? So he doesn't say cause, he's tricky. He says basis, support. De penje in vijaya. De penje. Penje means, how to say it? We're going to get into this in the next class, but there are basically two kinds of karma. And they are two links in the wheel of life. Two different links. I should bring the wheel of life next time.
You mean two links in
Yeah, you know that wheel of life with the monster who got the world in his hands? The second link is a potter making pots. That's called many weird translations. A good translation would be immature karma. Immature karma. Unripened karma. That's the karma you do throughout your life.
You mean causal, creating the causes? Karma in the sense of creating the causes?
Karma in the sense of all the things you think, say, and do in this life. Good or bad. Okay. Link number 10, do you know what the 10th link looks like? Number 2 is makes sense. It's a potter. Number 10 is a pregnant woman. And that means right karma. That's another kind of karma. That karma is your mind, mainly. And it's going to throw a new birth. It's going to project a new birth. So it's called projecting karma. And the difference between the second link, which is unripened karma, and the 10th link, which is ripened karma, is links number 8 and 9. Links number 8 and 9, we're going to talk about it next week. Basically, they are types of desire which trigger the karma and cause it to project a new birth. And that's a very important subject to learn if you want to get out of rebirth.
Could you just repeat that?
Excuse me?
Could you repeat that about
Yeah.
What
What makes number 10 ripe karma and number 2 unripe karma is number 8 and 9. Number 8 and 9 are forms of desire that occur as you die, which...
That occur as you die?
As you die, which make that karma potent enough. They give it the potency to throw a new life. So in that sense, the mind, what? What's its real relationship to the sense powers?
Make them born.
It basically causes them. He's not saying they turn into the sense powers, but basically they are the thing which throws the existence of the sense powers.
But it's the thing which causes life. No, it's what's causing life, and then life.
What's causing samsaric life?
Yeah, and then life is connected. And it seems like it's further down the line that sense powers is not a bad.
Yeah.
Or he's saying sense powers is life.
Well, now don't forget he's being sarcastic. He's exaggerating the case. Why? They are so attached to thinking that the sense powers are the basis for mind. So he says, you know how you sometimes do when you're trying to convince somebody of something, you say exactly the opposite for effect, you know, and see. Not only did I not, you know, lie to you that day, I went out of my way to tell you the exact truth. Probably wasn't, right? But you say the exact opposite. Not only did the sense powers not cause the mind, but they come from the mind. You know, and then he waits to see how they react. You know, this is Dharmakirti's argument. Now he's got to prove that, obviously. Obviously they can't take that on face value. A Charvaka can't say, oh yeah, you're right, I didn't think of that. My mind from my former life threw my mind into this, my sense powers into this life. They don't accept that form of mind existed. They might have to accept that there was a Panchakikyu, I don't know what you want to call that, like a locomotive cause. It's the cause which pushes the thing into the future. It's a different kind of cause. Like... projecting. It's a projecting. It's the one which pushes this event into the future. Makes it happen. Pen means what you do to an arrow with a bow. That's also called a pen. Not pen. So that's... I think this argument is more for effect. I don't think he's expecting a Charvaka to say, oh yeah, that's right. I think he's just trying to do a comeback. What's that?
Let's consider the mind. The mind provides the basis for the sense powers and the seed.
Because it projects them. Say, Lotu Chen.
Lotu Chen.
Ombo.
Ombo.
Mebe.
Mebe.
Gyinte.
Gyinte.
Yeah, that's wrong. Lo,
Nebe,
Kyuyente,
Mungi,
Yile,
Deta,
Chebeche.
Chebeche.
Lo Chiche means, let's consider the mind again. Chiche means, let's consider. When you're in a debate, you go, da 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 Chiche. What does Chö mean? Chö means Dharma, or existing thing. So when you say Chö Chen, it means let's take this thing. Chö has two completely different meanings. Dharma has two completely different meanings. One is the Buddhist teachings, and one is any object in the universe is called a Dharma. So a couple years ago when the Bumbo showed up for the winter debates for the first and last time, you know Bun, right?
Oh.
Bun.
Bon.
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 they came and they said, Bun Chen. I said, what? Bun Chen. He said, it's Chö Chen, not Bun Chen. He said, we don't believe Chö, we are Buns. it was really funny. I don't know, it would be like if someone was reading your newspaper and they were Catholic and it said baptism by fire and they said, Catholicism by fire. And they said, well, what do you mean? They said, well, we're not Baptists, so we can't use the word Baptist. You see what I mean? It would be that It would be that silly, you know? It was like really silly. What? So
they're not coming back again?
Bun is a religion that was in Tibet before.
They're not coming back?
They never came back. But they did pretty good. They just didn't come back. But 1 year they came. Sakyas came 1 year. It's like a, you know, it's a, what do you call it? It's a competition. You know, they weren't really ready for it. It's very hard. Long ambiguity means it is the cause for mind to stay. Consider mind. It is the cause for the mind to stay.
It refers to mind?
Yeah. Take your mind. What is, well, we'll get to that. What is keeping you alive, basically? Why does your mind go on? Why doesn't your mind just stop before you die? Or does it stop when you die? You know. But what makes it go on? Why did Marie Placide's mother die at that particular time? What made the mind stop at that particular time?
The body stops,
the mind stops. I mean, it appeared to stop. Oh, we say that, right? The body stops and the mind stops. I mean, but why? Well, first of all, you don't know if the mind stopped, right? I mean, that's not one of Dharmakirti's arguments, but that could be a pretty good argument. Actually, it comes later in Dharmakirti's text, but he says, you know, it's true that the body stops flopping around when the body stops flopping around. And then you think the mind is gone or something, or the mind died, but you have no evidence, you have no proof that the mind died. You're drawing a conclusion that may or may not be true. You can't prove that the mind stopped just because the body stopped flopping around. Like if the mind were still inside the body, but the body stopped working, then the mind would be like a captive in there saying, ah, I'm still here, you know, and the body just is not cooperating. The body can't move anymore. But what if the mind is still there? What if just the body stops working, and the mind is stuck without a body?
It's like a coma.
The mind doesn't die. You know, I mean, we don't know that that's not true. In fact, that's true. But we, just because the body stops doesn't prove that the mind has stopped necessarily. But that's not this argument. He says, not only does mind cause the sense powers, mind keeps your mind going. Mind is why your mind goes on in this life. Mind is why your mind doesn't stop in this life. What keeps you alive, basically? Why do some people die and some people live? Why do old people live and young people die? What keeps the mind going?
But how can mind cause mind? I'll give you a case. I mean, it's like saying the tree causes the tree. I mean, how can you say something causes itself?
Oh, good, yeah. He didn't say that technically. What he said was, mind causes the staying of the mind. Mind causes the sticking around of the mind. Okay. It's true that in a logical proof, you're not allowed to repeat one element twice. You can't say, take the mind, it's a mind, because, you know what I mean? You can't
prove it necessarily.
What is the
third sentence of this argument?
I didn't give it to you yet.
Oh. Why?
Yeah. Why does your mind stay? Basically, I mean, didn't you wonder why you're still alive? It's kind of unlikely, you know? I mean, cars get older. I have an 8-year-old car, and it's like, well made, but it's getting old, you know? You know, what makes the mind... Why does the mind stay, you Charvakas? You know, houses don't stay past 40 years, 50 years, you know, normally. Cars don't stay past 10 normally. Why do people stick around for so long? Why does your mind stay? What keeps your mind here?
Why does it stay around longer?
Why doesn't it? Yeah. And he says... former cases of mental karma cause it to stay, and we'll talk about it.
Former cases?
Yeah. Mental karma from the past. How's that? I'll tell you.
Okay. But it looks like it's a deterioration of the body. I mean, I would have to agree with the whatever they are. It certainly looks that way.
Yeah, because your elements go out of balance.
It certainly looks like your mind goes when your body goes.
Well, why does the body go?
Because it
you see, this
that's
is
the
a,
way it is.
Yeah, yeah. No, this is the argument. I mean, it's so elementary that you can't see it because of your cultural background. So it has nothing to do with the truth of the thing. Why do they go out of balance? Why does your mind?
It's not like nature did.
Why do you age?
Why? Why you? Why then? Why her? You know, why at that moment? You know, why?
It's circumstances.
Why did those circumstances occur? You see, that's what a Buddhist has to be thinking. There's causes for everything. You're not even a good Western scientist. You're not even a good Western thinker. You're not even a good Western normal person. If you say there's no cause for some things, but there's causes for other things, it doesn't make sense. If everything has a cause, then there has to be a reason why this person died today and not tomorrow. And why she died before he died. And he's much older. And I saw Dr. Shen, he's 82 years old. He's like, hey, Michael, how are you? and then Marie Pussy's mother, you know, healthy big lady. And she just, they gave her everything. They used everything. And she just died. You know? She died healthy. I mean, she just suddenly died. You know, they had her, they said she's going to be all right now, everything's fine. You know, and then boom, she's dead. You know, why?
Is that the ripening karma that you're talking about?
It's not exactly the same. This is referring to the general mental karma of your whole past life. What we just talked about were those very specific last-minute triggering karmas that throw your life into the future. If you could affect those karmas, if you could affect those emotions at death, and we're going to talk about it next class because it's so important, your next birth could be quite different. That's a big deal. That's so important that we're going to go to another book, actually, for that, which is the Abhisamma. We're going to go back to the Perfection of Wisdom book. But that's his argument. So let's pretend you're a Charaka. I'm Dharmakirti. Basically, the argument is this. You know, well, why do you think you're still alive? What do you think is keeping you going? And they say, well, you know, my elements didn't dissolve yet. And then he's got to try to prove. He say, well, why do some people with such good elements die quickly, you know, and other people with shaky elements live a long time, you know, years and years, you know, why? Why do some people die before others?
Because maybe you build resistance towards sickness.
But then some old people die before the young people. I mean, when you're talking causation, it has to be all the time. Same. I mean, it should be an absolute rule that older people die before younger people.
But there are exceptions in Buddhism too.
Or healthy people die after unhealthy people.
Michael, you're assuming that the causes are always supposed to be the same.
And then you say, well, it does, because, you know, even Vitus Gerulaitis or whatever, he was very healthy, but the elements got so messed up so fast.
Because
there
was a cause. There was the
elements, they messed up his elements to such a high degree, 50% of his blood became carbon monoxide, the oxygen in his blood.
Did that what he's called?
That he died. But then a Buddhist wants to know, why him? You know, the newspaper said 60 people in the whole United States die this way a year. Okay, so out of 200 million people, why him? And that's, you know, it just sounds obvious, it sounds silly,
but that's
the way it goes, but you're brainwashed by your culture.
No, but that's what medical research does. They go into the body and they check and say, why him? They say, well, yeah, it happened to him because he was
sleeping in that room and the propane leaked out and he died. But the Buddha says, well, why did the propane leak out when he was in the room?
Yeah, a good example is that there's a very rare disease where a child ages and by the time they're 8 years old, they've gone completely through the whole normal life cycle and their body becomes very old and then they die. I mean, there's probably a medical explanation for it, but just
no, there should
explain
be a
why it's happened.
Explaining, well, anyway, I get your argument. What you're saying is, Michael Roach, you're just explaining you've accepted that the elements cause the mind to die. Because when the elements get messed up to a certain point, the mind dies. And you're just trying to argue why the elements got messed up or not.
Right.
That's what you should be debating to people. But your hands are hurt, so you can't do it. Okay. There's one kid in the monastery that he has his arm cut off. So he goes, you think it's like, yeah, it's cool. He's got change the subject when you can't get out of the argument.
you said it has to be always true. What about many cases when you say killing is wrong, and yet we find that the Buddha killed this person because there's an exception there, and you have a lot of these in Buddhism where you say this is wrong, and you're not supposed to do this, and you're not supposed to, but then you hear this great Lama, he was a great Lama, he did something. But he was a great Lama. You know?
Well, because there's exceptions to some things doesn't mean there's exceptions to everything.
Yeah, but I'm saying, you know, why do you have to say that everything has to be, you know, true all the time? Because it's not the case in Buddhism that everything is true all the time. Because you are even the greatest Lama who made exceptions to that rule.
Well, let's say people try to say.
I don't know if it's reasonable.
People try to say that because Buddhism believes in emptiness, and because emptiness means that the thing could have been anyway. And then it just depends on your perceptions. Therefore, logic is not necessary in Buddhism. Therefore, logic is not applicable to Buddhists, or therefore, Buddhists don't believe in elementary proof of something. You know, because it could be anything. You know, that reality has a dual standard according to Buddhism, ultimate reality and relative. That's completely ridiculous and wrong. You know, and you see it in these great, long dissertations on Buddhism. No, Dharmakirti's logical approach is accepted by on every level of Buddhism.
There's no level
of Buddhism which doesn't accept Dharmakirti's logical rules. And logic is not silly, or logic is not irrelevant at a higher level or something. It's not at all. It applies always.
But it seems
you can logically prove Buddhahood, and you can logically prove Tantric Buddhahood, and everything, and only that.
Yeah, but it seems like you make the rules and you make the exceptions and everything. Yeah, I mean, yeah, okay.
Show me a rule that I made.
No, not you.
Show me a rule that Dharmakirti made. It's not true.
Well, what about killing? What about, I mean, I'm not very knowledgeable about that.
That killing is not a logical argument.
What if you turn this argument backwards, as far as I can see it, that if it's mind that's recreating mind, that's making it continue to live.
Let's say this.
Well, hold on.
Wait. I'm just going to state your argument.
No, you don't know my argument.
In the monastery, you get to yell back anytime.
How do you know?
Let's say, it's true that the thing that just before your first moment of mind in this life, let's say it's true, Michael Rose, that the thing that just before your first moment of consciousness in this life was your last consciousness in your last life. Let's say that that's true. Now go ahead.
That's not what I said.
Well, that's what I'm accepting.
That's interesting. Now that could be interesting, but let's just play with mine.
Okay. All right.
Okay, so what I was going to say is that if it's not that the body is, that when the degeneration of the body is causing the seemingly end of the mind.
Good.
If it's not that, then it would be that people could die anytime. Why is it that most people die when they age, when their body is degenerate, when they're sick, when their body reflects a decrepit...
Okay.
You know, there wouldn't be that relationship.
It's like this. You know, you say this. You say, I'll draw it, but here's baby's body and baby's mind, according to you, right? And they're very healthy, and then it gets like, the baby's body starts to get older, and it gets worse, and the mind gets worse too. And then at the end, the body gets, you know, worse and worse until finally there's no body, and so therefore the mind stops. That's what you're saying.
I'm saying, according to you,
in most cases,
if it was as you say that has nothing to do with the body, that is the mind continuing, then there wouldn't be a relationship. Then you wouldn't see this
relationship.
Right.
I'm saying there's an answer for that.
You see the relationship.
Can take it you. I'm saying the same force is projecting both of them. And that force is lessening. They're both coming from a different force. And that force is, the energy of that force is lessening as time goes on.
So the body is
And that's also why, according to my theory, okay, like kids can have diabetes because their parents had diabetes. Even though I say they don't have that unique relationship. They have a karma. They both have a karma to develop diabetes in the same family.
Michael, what exactly is...
That's my answer. You know, can I prove it to you? All I can give you is what's this class going to end up? I mean, it's going to end in another week or two, hopefully. And no, the plague has stopped my duty. That's the main town for our business.
Yeah,
really?
Oh,
okay.
No more trips through. I'm sure my boss is going to try to get me to go there.
No, don't go.
Yeah, that's exact count where all our businesses.
They said they're a center of the diamond industry.
You should buy diamonds now. 3 months now. Anyway, read every book you read, every conversation you have. There's allusions to the relationship between the body and the mind. It's a learned view. It's not an innate view. It's not that, you know, a primitive man believed this from the beginning. It's that your culture teaches it to you, and it's very hard to shake it. You know? All I can say is that, you know, take all of his arguments and just think about them. And I believe that, you know, I just, frankly, 5 or 6 years from now, it will start to affect your mind. And if you steep yourself in these texts, then your mind will start to change. And you'll start to see it. And I don't claim that it's going to happen.
Yeah, but by now we're trying to put it in a logical manner.
We are really trying
right?
to.
So
and maybe, what I'm saying is that manner. Maybe I have, but maybe our culture is so strong that it's I can't do it.
But if that's the case, then why do we have the karma to be so dense, such a false culture? What did we do to be so stupid?
Oh, no, it's a true question. We'll study it next class, next course, right? Karma. But basically, ignorance is caused by, I don't know, misleading other people in your past life. You know,
so collectively as a culture, we misled.
As a culture. Like, as a culture right now, we're collecting a very bad karma about abortions. You know, as a culture, or morality, you know, as a culture, we will all suffer a result together later from accepting that.
What
I'm saying is that we will as a culture, we will as a group experience a result. Or if we all supported a war or something, we would all reap a karma.
You mean when we pay taxes and
we're partially responsible. According to we're going to study that next time.
What exactly is the third line that he's saying?
Oh, okay, so it's take the mind. It's the reason why the mind stays. It's the cause for the mind to stay. Because what keeps the mind going is your former karma, your former mental karma. I'm sorry. What keeps the mind going is the mental karma from your past life. That's the real reason why you don't die.
So how does that take into account, like, the tennis player who died from something that was outside him? It wasn't natural causes, it was this thing that was outside. His karma caused this heating thing, and so how does that work?
This you got to study mind-only school. By the way, what mind-only school believes, and I'm not going to do it now, it's not that they don't think outside things exist at all. They believe that the mind and the thing which it perceives come from the same cause. So whatever may be this Gerolaitis' mind at that last moment, and the thing that made the propane leak out was the same thing. Did he die from the propane leaking? Not according to...
But what does this mean?
Not according to Dharmakirti. It contributed to his death. The elements were not a nice place to stay at that time.
So,
but the mind, what's caused the mind to appear to stop or the life to stop in this life was the wearing out of his past mental karma.
So it's some weird coincidence then.
No, it's not, is it? That the heat, it's not.
That went, that just happened to go at that time and his karma...
The body died. The body seemed to die. Sense powers stopped working. But did it stop his mind? That's the main question. I don't know if Dharmakirti would say... No, he would say it didn't stop the body.
Michael.
Didn't stop the life. It's not where the life stopped.
But getting back to what he did say, what does that mean? The mental karma, make a past life, what does that mean?
Oh, it just means your bad and good thoughts from your past lives. That's what keeps you going. Now, why did he restrict it to mental karma and not mention physical or speech? He's trying to, don't forget what he's trying to prove. He's making an extreme statement to try to convince somebody. He doesn't want to mention anything physical. Physical and verbal deeds are physical. He's avoiding that. See, he's a careful logician. He says, you know, it's mind that causes mind. He's trying to rub it in. What keeps you alive is your mind, not your sense powers.
If he were speaking to us, could he safely say both mental and physical karma?
If you're a Buddhist, yeah. But he restricted it to mental karma. Because he's trying to prove that mind causes mind. He could have said your mind, body, and speech of your past life. He didn't. He's restricting it to the mental karma of your past life.
And the
bad thoughts and good thoughts of your past life.
The mental karma does what in this case?
Keeps the mind going in this life.
Is there in all of this a distinction between the mind, the way you defined it several classes back, as being pure and knowing? I mean, clear and knowing, and the sort of contents of the mind that energize it. Fundamental mind is clear and knowing, it's always clear and knowing, and it doesn't wear out and then, you know, reappear in the next life. So there are really two kinds of minds being talked about here, right?
The clear and knowing is a quality of all states of mind, even when you're very upset, or when you're being very angry, or when you're very ignorant, or it's still clear and knowing.
And dying.
You're still aware.
Mm-hmm.
You're still aware. Yeah, and dying, it's a distinction between gross state of mind and a subtle state of mind. But you never lose your mind.
But technically speaking, it's not that aspect of the mind that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. He uses a very unusual word for mind throughout this argument. He calls it yilotopa, which you never see anywhere else. He mixes up three different words for mind, and he keeps repeating it over and over again. I've never seen a satisfactory explanation why. Maybe that has something to do with your question. You know, maybe he means the basic awareness or something. Maybe he just wants to talk about mind as awareness. Because he uses a combination of words for mind that appear nowhere else. You know, and I've asked many people, and I wasn't satisfied with the answer. He uses a different kind of word for mind. He uses a different phrase for mind than I've seen anywhere else. Throughout this whole argument. You know, it means the Sanskrit was a different word. So it might mean something like awareness. You know, why are you aware? Where does your awareness come from?
But then he's not saying that it's the awareness that...
He's talking about the stream of awareness.
That's what maintains the mind and maintains life.
When he gets to that...
It's a different
mind. Let's take your stream of awareness. What keeps your stream of awareness going?
It's
your past mental karma. But it is true I think he wants to avoid all specific references to mind. I think he just wants to say your mind in general, your awareness in general. And he uses a different word for that. Okay, have a break, and we have one more proof to go.
Chima.
Samjorte.
Samjorte.
Chachi.
Chachi.
Invece.
Invece.
Well, I guess it is too cold. Maybe you're allergic to mud. Tamelpa means normal person. Okay. I'll explain it more later. Normal person, Tamelpa.
What? Let's consider it normal.
Yeah, the chichen is going to be at the end, right?
Let's consider it.
Chika means what? Do you know? What's Chima mean?
Death.
Death, yeah. Chika means the moment of death. Literally means the mouth of death.
So let's consider a normal person at time of death, or?
Yeah, at the moment of death. Sim, his mind. Let's consider the mind of a normal person at the moment of death. Okay, I'll say it again. Let's consider the mind.
Let's consider the mind.
Of a normal person.
A normal person.
At the moment of his death.
The moment of death. Thank
his or her death. I gotta get used to that. Any H wrote me a letter that said you have to learn PC talk. And they say I need a PC advisor. Say Ranga.
Ranga.
Sanchima.
Sanchima.
Samjorte.
Samjorte.
Okay. Ranga means of its own type, its own kind. Sanchima means mind of the next life. Samdor means crosses the line. So, it crosses the line into the next life and becomes again a mind of its own type. A similar kind of mind.
Michael.
Too fast?
No,
That state of mind at death, right? It does cross the line into a similar state of mind in the future life. How's that?
Cross
the line into a similar state of mind in the next life. Why? Chakche yimbeche. Say chakche.
Chakche
yimbeche.
Yimbeche.
Chakche yimbeche.
Chakche yimbeche.
Chakche means it possesses desire. Yimbeche means because it possesses desire. What possesses desire?
Mind.
Which mind?
The mind of death.
One before.
The mind at the moment of death.
Oh, okay.
The mind of death. So what Dharmakirti is saying is, because a normal person's mind has desire as he dies, therefore that mind must cross the line into a similar, into the same thing, more of the same, in the future life. I had a lot of trouble with that proof. I mean, that, you know, is that a charvaka going to buy that? You know, and I don't understand the process that he's describing, you know. And it's a very, very big point in Buddhism. Supposedly, if you're an enemy destroyer, if you're an arhat, the difference between us and an arhat, if you're not an arhat, is that they don't have desire. Therefore, their mind will not have to go on to another samsaric birth. And don't forget, we always distinguish between a suffering rebirth and then the continuation of the mind in a paradise, in nirvana or something like that. It's not that you just stop. That's not nirvana. There's nothing to do with that. It's that your mind no longer has to go into this crappy kind of life.
Michael, when you talk about desire, is that a word that, you know, is kind of used a lot? But, I mean, when I'm thinking desire, they don't mean like desire like wanting something, do they? It means
we're
going
to go
like
into the definition of it next class. And please don't miss the next class. Okay? And if there's anyone who's on the border of, like, if you can reach them, the dasas, they ought to catch the next one. Because what we're going to do is go into what is the nature of that desire as you die, and why does it cause you to be born? Yeah. And that's very important. That's the whole next class. Okay. What is it?
Thursday.
It's Thursday. Because it'll take me an hour and a half to do that. And it's beautiful. It's really beautiful, and it makes good sense.
But it's not like
as it stands here, it's not very comfortable for me.
Yeah,
It's not just regular desire. It's not like that flat, simple
desire. It's not like that, no.
It's more.
And, you know, there's a lot of flavors to desire, right? Desire to help other people. Desire to see people get out of samsara. Desire to be free of samsara. Desire to reach eternal happiness. You know, those are.
So it refers to which desire?
We're going to talk about it next week. It's an advertisement for next class. For next class. Thursday.
Coming at back.
Then you have your review. When?
Monday. Oh, October 3rd.
Did I say that? Oh, yeah. And that's the last class I have to teach. Okay, good. The other class gets their review tomorrow. That's good. Homework. Where's the chimney? Where's it? What's umze mean?
Head.
Um means head. Ze means the head in the sense of leader. Ze means to do. So the chanting master is called unze. Unze. First female chanting
master.
This is the end of Class 9.